루리 좀 가 봐요. 대위배. 거요. 전교하셔. 남은 거로 먼저 가가야. 루이 남샤 샤바라 유전로다 유니데. 다 교하셔. 난 루마다. 거든 뭐 더 주고 샤마도 더 주고.
There's a group who is going to recite the versified text on the study of mind. I'm sorry, I don't have the text. Memorized the text. We don't have the text. No. It's Lorik. It's not there. It's basically they're going to through the text which gives the taxonomy of mind and mental factors and different types of consciousness, such as direct consciousness, inferential cognition, what is known as correct assumption, and then doubt, as well as mistaken consciousness. And then they're going also going through the different mental factors and what are known as the valid cognitions and non-valid cognitions. Cognitions which are able to realize their objects and cognitions which don't realize their objects and and types of mind which are uncertain and certain about their objects, conceptual mind. Mere intellectual understanding would just be and sometimes remain at the assumption, correct assumption level. So that's not the end, actually, of the text. So because they left somewhere in the middle of the text and didn't complete, His Holiness just says, shame on you. So regarding the So studying about mind and mental factors and which And also mental factors such as the omnipresent mental factors and so forth. To understand them is very beneficial. And then there are certain cognitions which are known as which are said to be to have an objects that are self-defined, that have self-defined characteristics. These are in accordance with the Sautrantikas and tradition. So while I do the preparatory practice for the blessing or permission of Manjushri, you should recite the Heart Sutra. So this is the praise to the Buddha, teacher Bhagavan Tathagata Arahant, perfectly and fully awakened, one perfect in knowledge and good conduct, Sugata. One going to bliss, knower of the world, supreme driver of human beings to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, to you, the Buddha, Bhagwan, glorious conqueror, Shakyamuni, I prostrate, worship, and go for refuge. So this is said three times. Teacher Bhagwan Tathagata Arahant, perfectly and fully awakened, when perfect in good perfect in knowledge and good conduct, Sugata, knower of the world, supreme driver of human beings to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, to you, the Buddha, Bhagwan, glorious conqueror, Shakyamuni, I prostrate, worship, and go for refuge. When, O chief of bipeds, you were born, on this earth you paced out seven strides, then said, I am supreme in this world. To you who were wise then, I prostrate. With pure bodies, form supremely pure, wisdom ocean, like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the three worlds, winner of the best, Lord, to you I prostrate. With the supreme signs, face, spotless moon, color like gold, to you I prostrate. Dust free like you, the three worlds are not, matchless, wise one, to you I prostrate. Lord, endowed with great compassion, teacher knowing everything, filled of ocean like virtues and merits, O Tathagata, homage to you, free of attachment through purity, through virtue, released from realms of worlds, uniquely supreme, ultimate, peaceful Dharma, homage to you, teaching the path from freedom to freedom, well established in the trainings, best of fields, endowed with virtues, Sangha, homage to you too. Do not commit any non-virtuous actions. Perform only perfect virtuous actions. Subdue your mind thoroughly. This is the teaching of the Buddha. A star, a fault of vision, a lamp, illusion, a drop of dew or bubble, a dream or lightning or a cloud. See conditioned things as such. Through these merits may sentient beings attain the rank of all-seeing, subdue the foe of faults, and be delivered from the samsara's ocean, perturbed by waves of aging, sickness, and death. Chibe lapcho be sibe chole drowan de warai shu. This is praise to the Buddha, the perfection of wisdom. And Heart Sutra, to the exalted three jewels I bow down. Thus have I heard at one time the Blessed One was dwelling at Rajagriha on Mass Vulture Mountain, together in one method with a great assembly of Odent and a great assembly of Bodhisattvas. At that time, the Blessed One was absorbed in the concentration on the countless aspects of phenomena called profound illumination. At that time, also, the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, was looking perfectly at the practice of the profound perfection of wisdom. Looking perfectly also at the emptiness of inherent existence of the five aggregates. then through the power of the Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said to the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, how should a child of the lineage train who wishes to engage in the practice of the profound perfection of wisdom? Thus he spoke, and the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, replied to the Venerable Shariputra, Sharadotiputra, Shariputras, whatever son or daughter of the lineage who wishes to engage in the practice of profound perfection of wisdom should look perfectly like this, also looking perfectly and correctly at the emptiness of inherent existence of the five aggregates. Form is empty, emptiness is form. Emptiness is not other than form, form too is not other than emptiness. Likewise, feelings, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, like this, all phenomena are merely empty, having no characteristics. They are not produced, they do not cease. They are not defiled, they have no defilement and no separation from defilement. They have no decrease, no increase. Therefore, Shariputra, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no composition factors, no consciousness. There is no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no form, no sound, no smell, no taste, no tactile object, no phenomenon. There is no eye element, no mind element, and so forth, up to no mental, no element of mental consciousness. There is no ignorance and no exhaustion of ignorance, and so forth, up to no aging and death, no exhaustion of aging and death. Likewise, there is no suffering, origination, cessation and path, no exalted wisdom, no attainment and no non-attainment. Therefore, Shariputra, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely on and abide in the perfection of wisdom. Their minds have no obscurations and no fear. Passing utterly beyond perversity, they attain the final state beyond sorrow. All the Buddhas who perfectly reside in the three times, relying on the perfection of wisdom, become manifest and complete Buddhas in the state of unsurpassed, perfect and complete enlightenment. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra which thoroughly pacifies all suffering, since it is not false, should be known as the truth. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is proclaimed, that yata gate gate paragate parasangate bodhisvaha. Shariputra, the Bodhisattva, a great being, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like this. Then the Blessed One arose from that concentration and said to the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, that he had spoken well. Good, good, O child of the lineage, it is like that. It is like that. Since it is like that, just as you have revealed, the profound perfection of wisdom should be practiced in that way. And all the Tathagatas will rejoice. When the Blessed One had said this, the Venerable Shariputra, the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, and the entire assembly of disciples, as well as the worldly beings, gods, humans, demigods, and spirits, were delighted and highly praised what had been spoken by the Blessed One.
Watching Bob, Papa, Chinres, one chola, Lexo, Shecha watching Lexo, Lexo, Rigabo, Tedishin, or Rigabo, Tedishin, Sherubke, Parado, Chimbala, Temula, Jebara, Chade, Tishin, Shewan, Jan, Cheso, Yerang, Jumden, Digge, Tegge, Cheka, Tene, Tedan, Demba, Sharon, Dutan. Jinju Senba, Senba Jinbo, Papa Jinri Sen, Wanchu Dham, Tamche Da Denbe, Kora Te Da Dham, Padam Mi Da, Hama Yin Dham, Chisara Chip, Jigden Yirang De, Jumden De Ge Sungba, Wambara Tu Do. A verse of homage from Abhisami Alamkara. Lamshi Nige, Jigden Dundrop, Zeba, Kong Kongda, Yangta, Dembe, Tumnam, Namba, Quinde, Nato, Disumba, Nindu, Changjum, Simbe, Toche, Sange, Kine, Yum, Della, Chate, Lo. So I pay homage to the perfection of wisdom, the mother, through the knowledge. No, sorry. I prostrate to the perfect Buddha, the best of all teachers, who taught that that which is dependent on origination is without cessation, without arising, without annihilation, without permanence, without coming and without going, without distinction, without identity, and peaceful, free from fabrications. Jumo, George, a blessing for the tea and bread.
paying homage to the spiritual masters.
Zura garura kinara maurga manugan sabaru bor zagra argam padi zon so kama light deva naga yage gendo azura garura kinara maurga manugan sabaru bor zagra argam so bande so benza pibe benza dube benza debo benza gende bezen benza shadon padi zon so wan deva naga yage gendo azura garura kinara maurga manugan sabaru namaso da ono bayu jimi gibe sote gure bar yugiano bolinda deva naga yage gendo azura garura kinara maurga manugan sabaru namaso da ono bayu jimi gibe sote gure bar yugiano bolinda deva naga yage gendo
So we have completed the preliminary rituals and prayers. And next we'll do bodhicitta, generation of bodhicitta ceremony. As we came across in the study of the text on study of mind, consciousness, cognition are explained. But the part that you missed to recite, you didn't know by heart. So you only have memorized up to the type of mind which is called having an appearance yet no certainty, ascertainment. And there are in the text, as you also recited, it covers this mind and mental events or mental factors. So mind here refers to the primary mind, and mental factors are the secondary minds, which are like a retinue to main mind. And so when we... with reference to bodhicitta, the term generation of bodhicitta means the mind of enlightenment. So mind here refers to the primary mind. And so in the Abhisamaya Alamkara by Maitreya, he says that bodhicitta is the mind, the intention to become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings. And it is also called, bodhicitta is also called the expansive mind. Expansiveness here refers to that the process of expanding. And so all of us have the mind. And in connection with this mind, of course, we have the sense of or thinking that I am this and that. So all sentient beings have this sense of I, or thinking about oneself. And then the mental factors, which are known as omnipresent or always are present in wherever there is a main mind. And within the mental omnipresent mental factors, there is feeling or sensation, and also intention or sempa, which actually moves mind to its object. And so these mental factors and the main mind are there in all sentient beings. With this, we have the sense of I. And generally speaking, all sentient beings have this innate sense of I am, or this is something spontaneously happening in us. So apart from those who have realized emptiness, the rest of the sentient beings, whenever they think about themselves, I am this or that, we have this sense of one's own body, mind, and on the basis of that sense of I, which comes in relation to the body and the mind, and also thinking about my relatives, my parents, and so forth. We have this, whenever we have a sense of I or mine, we actually see the I or the mine as as the governor or the ruler of the psychophysical aggregates. So that sense of I, that kind of sense of I that we have, according to Buddhism, unlike the non-Buddhist traditions, the non-Buddhist traditions use different rationally to reaffirm or this sense of I, where you think that there is the I, which is the ruler of the psychophysical aggregates, and the psychophysical aggregates are the ruled objects. And Kunkin Jamyang Shepa says in his root text on the philosophical tenets, the difference between, he says that the difference between the non-Buddhist and Buddhist traditions is that the Buddhists reject any objective existence of the what we cling on to, this independent existence of the self. And the non-Buddhists actually assert that there is such a self which is clung on to by this distorted way of looking at the self. And so the Buddhists are those who reject the object of this kind of perception, which sees an I or a self having some solidity. And then the non-Buddhists are those who actually assert such an existence of an I. And then we also have this self-cherishing attitude, although it may not be founded or rooted in this distorted view of I, but because we want happiness and we actually desire pleasant experiences and do not desire unpleasant ones, therefore we have this self-cherishing attitude. And then accordingly, we also expand that to the near and dear ones. And we are unhappy in relation to those whom we consider as not our near and dear ones. So if you stay selfish, self-centered, only thinking of your own self, then you are always at a loss. I mean, you are at disadvantage. And whereas if you open your heart to others, embrace others, and thinking of them, then you will not have that kind of the kind of fear and anxiety that you would have otherwise with the selfish, self-centered mind. And because of fear and anxiety, we have suspicion about others, and then anger also develops from there. When you think only of yourself, and so this becomes the root or the basis for anger and then other negative emotions. If you think that all sentient beings are like me, wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, that we are all same, then this constricted way of holding on to yourself doesn't happen, and then it helps you. So if you look amongst yourselves, school children, those who are very respectful to others and think such students are more happier. If there are those students who are only selfish, thinking only about themselves, then they won't interact with other students and other people in the schools. And even if they did, they would not do so with full honesty and openness. And then they will not have trust from others as well. I mean, they will not trust others. So perhaps when you have this kind of selfish thought, you may be able to save your candies more. So because if you care about others, then you would have to share your candies with others. So if you are able to embrace others and feel concerned about others' well-being, then of course we have self-cherishing attitude. You have to think, what are the pros and cons of selfishness? You will not be happy without any friends. And then, on the basis of that, you have other negative emotions arise. Of course, merely self-cherishing attitude itself is not the kind of basis of negative emotions, because self-cherishing attitude is even within those arahats of the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas. So without thinking only about yourself, but expanding your scope of thought, so as Tibetans, for example, we could think about 6 million Tibetans, and then expand that to the whole of Asia. There are several billion people in Asia, and then you can expand that further to the entire 7 billion people on this planet. And so in this way, if you think about helping others, benefiting others, and in on this world, and then you can expand further to the rest of the universe. As it is mentioned in the text, the universe is as numerous as the sand, grains of sand in the Ganges. And so, in this way, if you are able to expand your mind further and further, called embracing all sentient beings, then you would be actually thinking of all sentient beings, as it is said in Abhisamaya Alamkara, the verse that I quoted earlier about bodhicitta, which says that the bodhicitta is this mind which thinks of reaching Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. But at this point, of course, we have no ability or capability to help all sentient beings. But the question is whether we have the potential to reach that state where you are able to help all sentient beings or not. The answer is yes. So it's not only seeking blessings of the deities and the three jewels and so forth, but the practice of bodhisattva jnana is that you are actually aspiring to reach that state whereby you are able to help others limitlessly, and reaching that goal of omniscience, the Buddhahood. So if you are able to reach Buddhahood, you are able to benefit all sentient beings effortlessly. Effortlessly, and then also you are able to see all kinds of interests, dispositions, mental dispositions, and the characters of sentient beings precisely as they are, and accordingly you'll be able to give teachings which are suitable to these sentient beings. And so, if you are unable to, on the other hand, if you are unable to, although you may be very altruistic, I mean, if you are not able to see what is needed for that other person, then it would be difficult to help them. And whereas if you are able to develop this mind, this cognition or awareness, whereby you are able to see all needs, all dispositions, interests, and characters of sentient beings, the nature of sentient beings, precisely, then you'll be able to help them accordingly. So if you look at the 100 plus volumes of the Kanjur, the translated words of the Buddha, the Buddha has given teaching, but which, of course, the Buddha himself accepted, or his own personal philosophical view is that things have no self. But in accordance with his disciples' disposition, interests, and nature and characters, he even sometimes had taught that as if there is some kind of self. So the Buddha gave teachings in accordance with what is suitable in in accordance with the interest and proclivity of the sentient beings, suitably. And at some points, the Buddha also gave teachings on the mind, on the Chittamatra philosophy. And sometimes the Buddha also, in certain sutras, we find mentioned that all the three realms of existence are merely the mind. So these teachings were given by the Buddha in accordance with the interest, proclivity, and the character and nature of sentient beings, and in accordance with what is suitable to teach them at that point of time. And therefore, for us also, regarding ourselves, although we are full of ignorance at this stage, we should have this aspiration to overcome all this ignorance and the defilements, the imprints that are left by the ignorance and negative emotions, and wish or have this intention to reach Buddhahood. And therefore, the bodhicitta is defined as a primary mind which is intent on reaching Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. So within this, there are two aspirations. One aspiration here is a mental factor which accompanies or associates the main mind, bodhicitta. And so one aspiration is thinking of benefiting others, and the other is thinking of reaching Buddhahood. And so there are 51 of the 51 mental factors. This aspiration or dumpa is one of the mental factors. And so what we are talking about here is expand this aspiration to help all other sentient beings, not thinking only of oneself, all sentient beings. But you don't do that foolishly, but by using one's intelligence, you think of actually helping all sentient beings by yourself, thinking that I will do that and bring benefits to all sentient beings in order to reach Buddhahood. And therefore, in Arya Vimukti Sena's commentary on Abhisamaya Alamkara and the 25,000 verses of Perfection of Wisdom, he says that when we talk about enlightenment, bodhisattva, that what bodhisattvas do is they focus their mind with compassion to sentient beings, and with wisdom they focus their mind on enlightenment, the Buddhahood. And so the wisdom here is a reference to the wisdom realizing emptiness. And the term bodhi in Tibetan is changchup. Chang here meaning purifying all negativities. And this can be done through the realization of emptiness. And chup has the meaning of being able to know everything, encompassing everything. And as we came across the definition of mind, which is that which has clarity and awareness, so as long as it is a mind or consciousness, it has this quality of knowing something. This is natural quality of mind, and being aware. Of course, in order to be able to develop your mind further so that you're able to see more, you need training. And so within the mind, when we relate the mind to with the objects, there are the minds which are which actually take the aspect of the object, and there are those which do not take the aspect of the object as such. And so the scientists mainly explain mind in terms of those states of mind which have their aspect of the, which take the aspect of the object. So this regarding this, we have some commonality. And then there are other categories of mind where when we talk about cognizing things, there are those minds which are said to actually perceive each and every aspect of the object. And if it's multicolored, then there would be accordingly the same number of cognition arising, equal to the number of the colors and patterns. And whereas there is also another kind of the assertion that although there may be the object is multicolored, but there is only a single consciousness, and so that is known as the non-dual mind, which doesn't actually perceive each and every pattern in the object. So it seems the scientists are usually explaining the mind in terms of the mind's having the aspect of the object. And so this is in connection with the term Changchup, where which means that you have overcome all the negativities that are in the mind stream and have actually actualized all qualities that have to be that can be actualized within one's mind. And then, because the bodhisattvas are courageous in working for sentient beings, they are therefore their compassion focuses on sentient beings for the welfare of sentient beings. So in this way, we can understand how a bodhisattva focuses on their mind with wisdom on enlightenment and with compassion on sentient beings. So with regard to the Buddha, sometimes we tend to think that, oh, yes, there was such and such such a great person in the past, historical person. And then, with regard to the sutras that we have, there are commentaries to the sutras of the, which are the words of the Buddha, such as Maitreya's Maitreya's Abhisamaya Lankara, ornament for clear realization. When you are able to study this text by Maitreya and together with the 8,000 verses or lines of Prajaparamita Sutra, you would be able to see the magnanimity of the Maitreya's intelligence and wisdom. And so when you actually go through the details of what is covered in these two texts, comparing them, then you find them really amazing. And then with regards to the teaching of emptiness in the Prajaparamita Sutras, you'll find what Master Nagarjuna has said in the Mula Madhyamaka Karika at the end of the text. He says, I pay homage to the Gotama who, moved by his compassion, taught the sublime Dharma to rid us of distorted views. And you'll have this sense of delight in understanding the teaching of the Buddha. And so if you look at the teaching of the Buddha itself, you actually would be able to, as Jerembuche has said, you'd be able to see the greatness of the Buddha himself by judging by his teaching itself. It's not just saying that, oh, there was such a great person in the past, but... And also the Buddha is said to have given teaching in accordance with reality and by Vasubandhu. And so if you judge the teaching, the Buddha or the founders of the teaching on the basis of their teaching, you'll find the Buddha to be unique teacher as well. Of course, the Bible in Christianity, which also, of course, recounts the different stories related to Jesus' life. And then Judaism and Islam also are very good religious traditions. And then there are non-Buddhist Hindu teachings and scriptures. There are quite many. I don't know the details, but there are not as different types of teachings as the Buddha had given. But the difference between the teaching of the Buddha and the non-Buddhist traditions, other traditions, is that the Buddha actually has said that you should scrutinize my teaching and accept it, not out of blind faith. And so what I have done is explained the term Changchup Sempa, Bodhisattva. Of course, we will not be able to develop bodhicitta right away. It's not going to happen easily. But as students, if you have aspiration to become economists or lawyers and also doctors and engineers and so forth, of course, these cannot just happen by only having this wish, but you need to lay the foundation from this time from school, and then when you go into the higher studies, you should specialize in the different fields in order to reach your goal. And so, as the Parabhat Sutra says, Parak Samga De Bodhiswaha Dev Mantra, our goal, what this mantra shows, is our destiny or destination, which is the Buddhahood or enlightenment. And so, in order to reach that, just as you would have to reach, get a PhD degree by writing thesis, and for that you need to do a lot of research and study. And so in this way, there is a series of progression along the route to reach, become a PhD. Get the PhD degree. So likewise, in this case, on the journey to enlightenment, we need to make progress along the path. And so we should not just be lost in the sensorial experiences, but we need to use this amazing, wonderful human intelligence that we have. And we need to use the in order to realize the full potential of this brain that we have, the intelligence. And therefore, you find the need to study Buddhism and through logic and reasoning. So the first step to enlightenment is the doorway to Buddhahood is cultivating and developing bodhicitta, this altruistic attitude or altruistic mind. Although we may not be able to right away develop it, but we need to keep that in mind to develop bodhicitta within ourselves, to have the true, genuine experience by making transformation within ourselves and gradually progressing along the experiences that you develop. And so you should keep that in mind as the goal to develop bodhicitta. So regarding myself, around 40 or 50 years ago, I had, of course, great faith and in bodhicitta. I have felt that this is really a great practice to help one's mind. But personally, I felt that it's not something that I would be able to develop. So I remember very clearly in this very hall, maybe 50 years ago, I did give a teaching on the four annotated texts on Guhyasamaja. So I felt that, of course, bodhicitta is very nice, but I have difficulty. It would be difficult for me to generate it. But then I kind of trained my mind to develop bodhicitta. And then in 1967, I received teaching on Bodhisattva Charya Avatara from Kuno Lama Tenzin Gelsen. And he told me that this text, Bodhisattva Charya Avatara, Guide to the Bodhisattva Way of Life, it would be good for you to give teaching on it frequently. And so I kept that in his advice in mind. And of course, when I give teaching, I could actually either give an extensive explanation or abbreviated version of the explanations. So I've taught it many times. And sometimes I also read it and contemplate, reflect on the meaning. And then slowly And slowly, this aspiration or the interest in bodhicitta kind of grew stronger. And then I felt eventually I felt that the close to bodhicitta. So regarding emptiness, it has been easier for me to understand than bodhicitta, the experience. So in Chandrakshita's ornament of the middle way, he says that those who are of the sharper intellect actually realize emptiness first, and then they would develop bodhicitta, whereas those who have the trait of bodhisattvas and who are of a duller intellect, inferior intellect, they would first generate bodhicitta and then develop insight into emptiness. So he makes the distinction between the two types of bodhisattvas. And so thinking along these lines of Chandrakshita, I feel that I actually am one of those with the sharper intellect. So since I was around 20, in my 20s, I've been thinking about emptiness, and it has become easier for me to understand, whereas bodhicitta always felt very difficult for me to have the experience of. In other words, in any case, it is very important for us to combine both the method and the wisdom practices. As Chandrakirti says, these are the two wings of a swan that can fly across the ocean and reach the further shore. So these are the lines from also from Chandrakirti's Madhyamaka Avatara, entering the middle way. He says the realization of emptiness. With regard to the three realms of existence, everything in the three realms, everything, are without any inherent or independent objective existence, but they do appear to have such an existence. But what we need to do is destroy that kind of objectification in the things. And therefore, the ignorance clinging to such an objective existence in things will be destroyed, and you will go to the cessation. So although when you look at things from the point of view of, from the vantage point of the understanding or insight into emptiness, you will not be able to say this or that, but you should also understand that conventionally things do exist, and therefore when you think about emptiness, when you're able to think about emptiness and have insight into emptiness, then you will see that all the negative emotions have their root in this clinging to the independent existence in things. And when you destroy that objectification in things, then you'll see that that suffering can be ended, and there's cessation to suffering. And therefore, all sentient beings, have this root of samsara, the samsaric existence, which is the clinging to objective existence. And therefore, if you are able to actually think along these lines, you'll be able to see that the sentient beings who are in samsara, bound by this clinging to objective existence and things, can be introduced to the fact that there is no independent objective existence and things, and then led to grow the understanding and insight into emptiness, thereby leading them out of samsara through that experience. So, for example, if you are able to see someone in trouble, and if you find that there is possibility for you to help the person out of that river, if the person is drowning, and if you see that there is possibility for you to save the person, and you'll be able to actually do something, whether you personally would be able to help the person, or you could use some rope or something to help the person out of that river. And So when you see that, then you will be able to actually put an effort. Otherwise, similarly in the case of samsara, if you find the possibility of ending samsara, then you will be able to actually think of putting effort in overcoming the suffering. So in short, all of us, of course, do not want suffering, but suffering is not something that comes from outside, but because of our undisciplined mind. Why? Because of our self-cherishing attitude and the clinging to some independent existence. So these two are the agents which have made us unruly. And therefore, what we need to do is develop this cherishing others, attitude of cherishing others over oneself, and also realizing that things have no independent true existence. And so, apart from these two methods, there is no other means to help ourselves. Whatever you do, whether reciting mantras or doing prostrations and going around temples and so forth, will not help at all. But if you can actually develop these experiences, these two principles within oneself, and imbued by these two principles within one's mind, if you then do the other practices, recitation of mantras, prayers, prostrations, and going around temples and so forth, they will also help. So we'll do the ceremony for cultivating or generating bodhicitta. And so for that, please imagine the Buddha in front of you. So imagine the Buddha in person right here and surrounded by these bodhisattvas and great masters of India and so forth. And with them as witness, you would be. So I wanted to tell you a story about the Avalokiteshvara statue. During the Cultural Revolution, the Avalokiteshvara statue in Lhasa was destroyed. And the Jowa Shakyamuni the Jowa statue in Lhasa was also damaged. People hit, they have actually caused some dent in his knee. So I had once a dream in which I was going around a temple, a shrine of Avalokiteshvara, and the five what are known as the five self-emanated statues, and Avalokiteshvara was actually calling me in, and I actually, in my dream, hugged the statue of the Avalokiteshvara, and Rangjung Adang it's called, and the statue actually recited this verse from the prayer of Maitreya, which says, and he actually started reciting this verse, on about putting effort, joyous effort. And then after that, of course, during the Cultural Revolution, that the statue was destroyed. And then some parts of the statue actually came to me here. And therefore, I used them for to put inside the Avalokiteshvara statue here, the thousand-armed, thousand-eyed. And so this statue has been made and with a view, intention, that it could be taken back to Tibet, because the different hands and the different parts could actually be taken apart. And so we should go back to Tibet together, okay? And so we should take it with on our backs, and then when we feel tired of carrying it, then we could actually put this statue in the in some vehicle, and then. And so the reason why the Buddha has become someone who is sacred is because of compassion, as Chandrakirti praises in his Madhyamaka Avatara. In the beginning, he actually made his prayer or composed this verses of worship in connection to the compassion in Madhyamaka Avatara. And so, Buddhism, when it's first spread in Tibet, the Tibetan emperor Tisung Detsen invited to go Chandrakshita. And when there were lots of obstacles from humans and non-humans, and then Chandrakshita advised the teacher to invite Guru Padmasambhava to overcome these obstacles. And therefore, Guru Padmasambhava was invited from India to Tibet through Nepal, and therefore, he came to Tibet, and with regard to the tradition of debate and study of the Buddhist philosophy, and also the monastic ordination lineage, it came from Chandrakshita, Master Abbot Chandrakshita. And then Guru Padmasambhava also is someone who has a very special karmic connection with us Tibetans. And he's also known as the emanation body of Amitabha. And so you should actually think that these great beings are here in person with us. And then around the Buddha, you should think there are the great masters like Nagarjuna and his disciples and followers, and then Asanga, and his followers and disciples, and then the great masters of the Tibetan Buddhist traditions around them, and from the Nyingma tradition, and then also the masters of the Sarma, the new translation tradition, such as the Kadam tradition, the masters of Kadam tradition, such as Atisha and Drumtempa and so forth, and then the Sakya tradition and Gayu traditions. Masters, as well as the new, the renewed Kadam tradition, which is the Gelug tradition. So the masters of these, as well as the Jonang masters. And so, and we should visualize these great masters surrounding the Buddha, and do the ceremony, take part in the ceremony for bodhicitta. And so for that, we'll do the seven-limb practice. Do you know the seven-limb practice? So in short, the seven-limb consists of prostration, making offering, the making confession, and then rejoicing and requesting to teach the Dharma, and requesting not to pass away, and finally dedicating. And so this saying the dedication prayer, and so this is in accordance with the in relation to emanation body. And so just as we come across these words, so the gyawa chungse da gi chi sa ba tham je zo be chang ju chi rang san zhe wa dang chi ji shi ji so yi rang gui xin so gyawa chungse da gi chi sa tham je zo be chang ju chi rang san zhe wa dang chi ji shi gui xin so wa de gyawa chungse da gi chi sa tham je zo be chang ju chi rang. So whatever slight positive potential I may have created by paying homage, offering acknowledgement, my faults, rejoicing and requesting that the Buddha stay and teach, I now dedicate all these for full awakening. And so for the generation of Bodhicitta, we'll say the usual verse of taking refuge and generating Bodhicitta. The verse which begins with I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha until I am enlightened, and whatever practices I may I have done, such as the perfection of generosity and so forth, may I become a Buddha. Through these, may I become Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So this was composed by Jo Atisha. And so once I was in Hanle, I think in Ladakh, and the people there are says to be descendants of the Greece, Greek, have their ancestral lineage in Greece. And so when I these people put some flowers on their heads, and they and then they wear some kind of a white cloth, and they have a slightly different face than Ladakhi, the other Ladakhis. They have some European face. And so I went to their place and gave teachings. And they are Buddhists now. And I recited this verse. I actually asked them, how many of you actually know this verse of taking refuge in Bodhicitta? So all of them raised their hands when I asked them to raise their hands. And then I asked, how many of you actually understand the meaning of this verse? And there was none who raised their hands. So with regard to the meaning of the this verse, it shows the practice of taking refuge and bodhicitta. So with regard to taking refuge, there is a refuge, practice of taking refuge from the point of view of beings of small scope, medium scope, and intermediate scope, and great scope. Or we can talk about the taking refuge from the point of view of the Shravakas and Pratyekabuddhas and Bodhisattvas. And then there is also the principle of taking refuge from the point of view of Tantra. And when it comes to Tantra, there is the external way of taking refuge, internal secret way of taking refuge. And so the first two lines which say, I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha until I'm enlightened. So here, when you say until enlightenment, this is a reference to taking refuge from the Mahayana point of view. So why? Because you are actually thinking of reaching Buddhahood, the omniscient state of Buddhahood, when you say until I reach enlightenment. And then the next two lines which say, through the practice of generosity and so forth, may I become Buddha to benefit all sentient beings, shows, these two lines show the practice or the principle of bodhicitta. And so when you say, sometimes in these two next two lines, later two lines, sometimes we say, made through the merit of that I have gained through the practice of generosity and so forth, it is slightly in... not complete in terms of the two stores of merit and wisdom. And so if you say may through the collections of merit and wisdom, then you are being more inclusive. So in this collection, you actually include merit and wisdom. And so wisdom here refers to the wisdom realizing emptiness. So if you argue that, of course, the text itself doesn't mention wisdom, accumulation of wisdom, but you should understand that since you are saying that I will take refuge until I'm enlightened, therefore, enlightenment here is the Buddhahood, and then you say I will take refuge until I'm enlightened, and then after that, you say, my practice of generosity and so forth. You say, in order to lead all sentient beings through this, all sentient beings to the state of normal, a non-abiding enlightenment or Buddhahood. And so, with regards to these two, the entire verse, you come across the term I. And so, in this connection, you see me, I see you, but you see my body, I see your body, and you also hear my voice. And although you may not be able to see my mind directly, but you can infer from my voice what I kind of the thoughts that are going on in my mind from my voice. But if you ask, who is the Dalai Lama, Gyawa Rinpoche? You see my body, but you see my voice. So I see you, your body, when you recite the prayers and so forth, I hear your voice. And then when you have express your devotion to me, faith, as it is said in a Vinaya text, it is said that although the fish is underneath the water, but because of the waves that form, the patterns, the certain patterns form on the surface of the water, you can infer there is fish underneath. And so, if you ask whose body, whose speech, and whose mind, is it? You say, you may say, oh, it's Taishi's body, speech, and mind. But where is Taishi? Who is Taishi? If you are asked, if you are further pushed, I mean, where is Taishi? Who is actually speaking? And so forth. You'll not be able to pinpoint to some entity called Taishi when you do this kind of investigation. And you will also say that I'm unhappy or happy and so forth. But if you actually check where that I is, you will not be able to find that. So in the Mula Madhyamaka Karika, it says that the Tathagata is neither in the body, the psychophysical aggregates, nor the psychophysical aggregates are in the Tathagata. And so the psychophysical aggregates do not possess Tathagata, nor the Tathagata possess them. And then who is Tathagata? So this can be applied, the logic can be applied to oneself as well. And then in the Ratnavali, it says that because you are a composite of this the different components of oneself, and you will not find the person as such within them. So my head, legs, hands, and so forth are part of me. And so we, there is a whole person and the parts of that whole person. And so as long as there is a whole, you can talk about its parts. And so in relation to the whole, you can actually say there are these parts to it. Whereas without the whole, you cannot talk about the parts. But apart from the parts, you cannot actually say there is a whole as well. And so this is what quantum physics also talks about, that nothing can be found objectively. And similarly, it is the case with your voice. So when you speak, the sound actually goes through this momentary change. And then with regard to the mind, you cannot actually pinpoint at something called mind if you try to search for it. Even if it may be the tiniest part of the mind or body and so forth. I mean, you can say that this is a part of the mind or the body and so forth, such and such is part of the mind, body and so forth. But when you actually try to search and pinpoint what your body or mind or speech is, you cannot find anything. So what you can say is that although these things appear to me as if they have some kind of objective existence, they do not have that existence, that way of existence at all. And so when you think along these lines of reasoning, I mean, you will find that within this practice of the taking refuge and bodhicitta, there are both the accumulation of merit, the practices of accumulating merit and wisdom. So when you say, made through my practices of generosity and so forth, or made through the accumulations or collections of merit and wisdom, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So by thinking along the reasons that were given earlier about compassion, as scientists also say that the basic nature of human beings is compassionate, you should also think that I will use this human intelligence that I have for the greatest purpose of liberating all sentient beings, including myself, out of existence and samsara, and all the sentient beings have this real enemy that is within themselves, that is self-cherishing attitude and the grasping at some absolute existence in things. And therefore, in order to overcome them, you think of reaching Buddhahood and think of liberating all sentient beings to the state of Buddhahood. So for this, we will so you can kneel on your right knee. So please repeat these lines. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly through the collections of merit and wisdom created by giving and others. May I attain Buddhahood to help all sentient beings. Please say it once again. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly through the collections of merit and wisdom created by giving and others. May I attain Buddhahood to help all sentient beings. So at the third repetition, when you say the last line, may I attain Buddhahood to help all sentient beings, you have to think that the Buddha and all the other deities and great masters of all traditions in the space around him as a witness. So just as you think that just as you, Buddha, and your entourage have generated bodhicitta in the past, I will take your good example and follow in your footsteps and regenerate this bodhicitta, aspiring bodhicitta for the sake of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. Through the collections of merit and wisdom created by giving and others, may I attain Buddhahood to help all sentient beings. May the jewel, supreme jewel bodhicitta arise in those who don't have it yet, and may it increase further, evermore, in those who have it. May I be sustenance for sentient beings as the elements, just as they would desire to enjoy them. Even if a few sentient beings have not become enlightened, wherever they are, may I work for them, even if I have, even after my enlightenment, as long as space remains, as sentient beings remain, may I too abide to dispel the misery of sentient beings. Today, my life has borne fruit. This human life has become meaningful. From now on, come what may, I will act in accordance with this pure lineage, answer lead. Please sit down. So it is great. We should feel that it's a great. You feel greatly fortunate to have this opportunity to generate bodhicitta. In many scriptures, the Buddha himself has actually talked about the benefit of bodhicitta, cultivating it. So if you look at the life stories and accounts of the great masters, including the Buddha himself, and you will find the mention of them having been moved to tears. That is because of this bodhicitta. So it is. I feel also fortunate to have this opportunity to give this bodhicitta ceremony. So we'll have a break here for 15 minutes. So do you have to go to the restroom? So if you don't go to the restroom now, if you have to go, and then at the end of this teaching and the ceremonies, if you have left your place where you're sitting wet, then that's not good. So this happened to me once when I was on in a teaching. At a function. So His Holiness is saying that once when the Namgyal monks were doing some ritual, they started the ritual which is actually in which they have some chantings. And as they started the chanting, I started to actually feel that I have to go to the loo.
Maravadana deo, 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 maravadana deo Nadi, Umarabaza, Nadi, Umarabaza, 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 Umarabaza,
Umarabaza Nadi, 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 Umarab
So His Holiness is doing the ritual to drive away any kind of hindrances that may be caused by spirits and so forth to this practice of giving the Jenang of Manjushri, which is a permission practice called permission to practice. Do practice on the Manjushri with the Buddha of Wisdom by making offering of ritual cake. And so His Honor is saying that some of the students in the front have not got tea. And so perhaps he says he's telling a story about a lama giving some initiation. And during the initiations, many times the lamas would say, please imagine that you are doing this and that, and you're receiving this and that blessing and so forth. And then amongst the audience, there was some nomad and who had actually brought some butter to offer. But because he only heard the Lama saying, just imagine you receiving this and that blessing and so forth, he actually responded by saying, please, Lama, you also imagine that you have received this butter from me. And so he took off the butter from his pocket and then put it back. And so I would also say to you, the kids, please imagine that you have tea. And then the rice that you have been given, you should use it, keep it for now, and you'll be using it when you make mandala offering. Puh. Beja gal gomma jumato. Beja yale. Oh. So they actually, the kids don't have their mugs with them, although they had them with their mugs in the beginning. Now they don't have it, and so His Holiness says it serves you well. It's your mistake not to keep your mugs. It serves you right, yeah. So this is still the offering of the ritual cakes to drive away any evil or negative forces who might otherwise hinder this ceremony for the permission to do practice on Manjushri. So, having done with the bodhicitta ceremony, regenerating bodhicitta, next we are concerned with the tantric practice. Here we are going to go do the jenang, or permission to practice. And also there are the empowerments of the deities. So of these two, we are doing just the former. So some, anybody who has not got tea, His Holiness is asking. So within the Jianangs, there are hundreds and thousands of different deities, Jianangs of different deities. And of these, we are doing here Manjushri Jianang. And Manjushri is the embodiment or the personification of the wisdom of all the victorious ones, the Buddhas. And Jianrizik Avalokiteshvara is the embodiment or personification of the compassion of all the Buddhas, and Tara, Arya Tara, is known as the personification of the Buddha's enlightened deeds. So when we talk about the personification of wisdom or compassion and so forth, we should understand that we are not referring to a very particular kind of a deity which exists solidly. And so, because there are people who would do certain tantric practices, the Buddhas, actually the compassion of or the wisdom of the Buddhas arise in the form of deities such as Avalokiteshvara being the embodiment of compassion and wisdom and, with regards to the Manjushri. And so, for some meditator, these compassion and wisdom of the Buddhas would appear in the form of a deity. In this case, Manjushri as the personification of wisdom. And then an individual practitioner would do their his or her practice based on Manjushri or Maitreya or Avalokiteshvara and so forth. They could transform themselves finally into these deities, Avalokiteshvara and so forth, become Avalokiteshvara or Manjushri and so forth. And so in that sense, that particular person is an individual body, deity of wisdom and compassion and so forth. And so the vast teachings of the Buddha, comprising the method and wisdom, and in all these practices of Dharma, both the it is important that the wisdom or intelligence becomes very crucial, and particularly in the case of students, it is very important. And so, particularly through your own study, and you should develop the wisdom or understanding that is drawn based on that comes that arises through study and reflection and meditation. And as an external catalyst, you would have these deities, personification of the wisdom and compassion and so forth. And so with regard to Manjushri, because of the difference in the dispositions or character and nature of the practitioners, the certain disciples, there are different practices that you can do. Even as an individual, you can do practice on Manjushri based on the Kriya Tantra, Charya Tantra, or on Yoga Tantra and Anuttara Yoga Tantras. And so in this case, we are concerned with the practice related to the Kriya Tantra, Manjushri related to the Kriya Tantra. As I said yesterday, when even within the practice based on Manjushri, you can have white Manjushri for especially focusing on bodhicitta compassion, and then there are other aspects of Manjushri for wisdom. And this Manjushri that we are doing, the Jainang of, is concerned with the wisdom. And so in his right hand he holds the wisdom sword, and in his left hand he holds the a scripture. And so whether you are studying economics or science, I mean, you can actually visualize when you meditate and visualize and do some meditation on Manjushri. You can visualize the particular text that you are studying in his hand. And so in this, the usual portrait of Manjushri is that in his left hand he holds a perfection of wisdom scripture. So this particular Jainang permission initiation comes from the Rinjung Gyatsa. Hundreds of different jainangs and initiations that are contained in this text called Rinjung Gyatsa. As we are saying the mandala offering, Drogon Ramda Shingla Chobar Shod, the ground anointed with perfume and strewn with flowers, a Mount Meru, the four continents adorned with sun and moon, is visualized as a Buddha filled and offered to you. May all migratory beings enjoy the pure lands. So with this, we have made the offering to the Guru for the Jainang. And so, in order to give this Jainang, or the Lama himself who gives it, has to dissolve the ordinary perception and conception of himself, and because you cannot do tantric rituals and practices within that kind of perception. Therefore, you need to have the perception of yourself as a deity and actually have the divine pride of yourself as being the deity. And this actually counters the perceiving and having this divine pride of yourself as a deity, counters your ordinary perception of yourself as an ordinary person. And so you first meditate on emptiness and dissolve this yourself into emptiness. And so, although when you are absorbed in meditation, that mind is absorbed in the ultimate reality of things, and the yoga of ultimate reality. But from within that meditation on emptiness, you know, what you do is your mind arises in the form of a deity. And so your mind ascertains emptiness, but you visualize yourself in transforming into a deity. And within this meditation, you see yourself as illusion-like. So while you meditate on emptiness, you transform yourself into a deity, and therefore you have this sense of I within this perspective of yourself as a deity, and therefore you ascertain emptiness, and then visualize yourself as a deity as well. And so the impure realms that we usually perceive are not stable basis for enlightenment. And so when you dissolve everything into emptiness in this kind of practice, then you actually dissolve the impure realm as well. And the basis for the purity of the mind of the Buddha, which is the total elimination of all defilements, comes through meditation on emptiness. And therefore, you rise into a deity and have this divine pride of yourself as a deity, and therefore the basis of your meditation on emptiness here is the form of the deity, which is a pure form. And so the Svabhavakaya that you attain comes from this meditation on a deity form, which is empty. So this is important to understand, that merely meditating on yourself meditating on yourself and then thinking of yourself as emptiness is not enough. And so you have to, you can't have the ordinary person as the basis of meditation on emptiness in this case, but you have to transform yourself into a pure being, a deity, and then meditate on emptiness. In order to do the tantric practice. And so I have done that in order to give this jhanang. I have dissolved myself into emptiness, and from within that meditation on emptiness, arisen into Manjushri. And on my crown is white Manjushri, and at my throat is red Manjushri, and at my heart is dark blue Manjushri. So I have generated myself into Manjushri, and then similarly, you should visualize in the altar Manjushri, in the altar as the front-generated deity. And so with this in mind, thinking of receiving the blessings, please repeat this. Please bless me with the supreme mind or intelligence of the Tathagatas. So in order to purify your mind stream, you take refuge in the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in front. So earlier we did the practice of generating bodhicitta on the basis of the one verse of refuge and generating bodhicitta. So here we'll recite the verses for generating bodhicitta, which says, I seek refuge in the three jewels, I confess all misdeeds individually, I rejoice in the virtuous deeds of all beings, I take to mind the Buddha's enlightenment. So that is taking refuge, and then the next verse shows the generating bodhicitta, and then the third verse is the verse for taking the bodhisattva vows. And so if you take the bodhisattva vows, what you do is you are actually pledging to keep the 18 root downfalls, and then there are certain practices that you do in order not to cause decline to bodhicitta in this life, and the abandoning the four black activities, and then causing the bodhicitta not to decline in the next lives by practicing the four white dharmas. And So in order to receive the blessing of the Jianang, you, ideally you should have received a full-fledged initiation. So those of you who have not received a full-fledged initiation, such as Avalokiteshvara initiation or Kalachakra initiation, of course those who have received these initiations, full-fledged initiations, you can, in this ceremony, when we go through the ritual, you can visualize yourself as the particular deity, Manjushri. But those who have not received full-fledged initiations, if you're not sure, don't, about whether you have received full-fledged initiation or not, then you may just visualize Manjushri on your crown. So regarding myself, I do generate bodhicitta and take bodhisattva vows every day. In connection with the self-entry into a mandala of the deities. And then I do meditate on emptiness and bodhicitta as well. And so here we'll do this bodhisattva vow, taking the bodhisattva vow. So the first verse is taking refuge and confessing one's misdeeds and rejoicing in the virtues and then generating bodhicitta. So whether you want to accomplish your own interests, your own goals or interests and goals of others, there is no greater factor than bodhicitta. And so in this text that we are going to go through, you say, to fulfill the interests of oneself and others, I shall generate the mind for awakening. And having generated the mind for highest awakening, I shall invite all sentient beings as my guests. And so you should not think of overcoming sentient beings as such, but the real enemy is within yourself. And you should think of overcoming and destroying these negative emotions that you have, the disturbing emotions and the self-cherishing attitude and grasping at true existence or absolute existence in things. So if you think along these lines, there is possibility to overcome them. And so I shall invite all sentient beings as my guests. I shall engage in the delighting supreme or best practices of enlightenment. So when you have said, I will call on sentient beings as my guests. What is the purpose of doing that is to lead them to the ultimate enlightenment of omniscient state of Buddhahood. And therefore, you say, I shall engage in the delightful practices or supreme practices of enlightenment, having called or invited the guests, sentient beings as your guests, in order to fulfill their goal, in order to fulfill their wishes and desires. What you can do is to engage in the practices of the six perfections and the four means of attracting disciples. And so by practicing generosity, morality, patience, and so forth, you would be able to help others even on the immediate level. And then within the patience, there are patience which are like accepting one's accepting suffering and so forth willingly. And for the generation of bodhicitta, we have sources in Buddha, Madhyamaka Avatara and Ratnavali and so forth. And then with regard to the perfection of meditation or concentration and wisdom, so in order to benefit sentient beings,
on the temporary level as well as ultimate lasting goal of happiness for them, you are saying that I shall engage in the delightful supreme practices of enlightenment or bodhisattva practices. And so you are saying you will engage or embrace these practices for the benefit of all sentient beings. And then you say, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. At that point, you actually are taking the bodhisattva vows. And so if you think that you would be able to keep the bodhisattva vows, then you should actually take them. If you don't think you will be able to, you'll be able to keep the bodhisattva vows, such as keeping the from the 18 root downfalls and so forth, and then you should only perhaps generate bodhicitta, this altruistic mind, thinking of benefiting all sentient beings, and just reaching, thinking of or intending to become a Buddha. And so the main, the most important thing in bodhicitta and practice of bodhicitta and bodhisattva vows is to keep away from selfish motive completely, and thinking of others more than oneself. So please repeat these lines for bodhisattva vow, if you're taking bodhisattva vows. As I have explained, visualize Buddhas, bodhisattvas of the 10 directions and three times, and from the 10 directions, and particularly visualize myself, me, as the Lama who has arisen into the form of a deity, Manjushri, and also Manjushri, a deity in the front generated mandala. So in order to lead sentient beings to higher rebirth, you should have the understanding, do so within the understanding, with the understanding of law of causality, and keeping away from the ten non-virtuous or unwholesome actions, and having with the understanding, with the help of the understanding of, or causing the understanding of the dependent origination, and in terms of how things are designated, you think of leading sentient beings to higher rebirth and enlightenment, and particularly the highest enlightenment of omniscience or Buddhahood. And so with this in mind, just as the Buddhas of the, and the bodhisattvas of the past have generated bodhicitta and engaged in the bodhisattva practices to reach the ultimate goal, likewise you think of doing so yourself. I seek refuge in the three jewels. Please repeat. I confess all misdeeds individually. I rejoice in the virtuous deeds of all beings. I take to heart the Buddha's enlightenment. To the Buddha, Dharma, and the highest assembly, I seek refuge until I reach enlightenment. To fulfill the interests of oneself and others, I shall generate the mind for awakening. Having generated the mind for highest awakening, I shall invite all sentient beings as my guests. I shall engage in the delightful supreme practices of enlightenment. May I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of sentient beings. Please repeat it for the second time. I seek refuge in the three jewels. I confess all misdeeds individually. I rejoice in the virtuous deeds of all beings. I take to my heart the Buddha's enlightenment. To the Buddha, Dharma, and the highest assembly, I seek refuge until I reach enlightenment. To fulfill the interests of oneself and others, I shall generate the mind for awakening. Having generated the mind for highest awakening, I shall invite all sentient beings as my guests. I shall engage in the delightful supreme practices of enlightenment. May I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. So at the end of the third repetition, when you say, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings, feel convinced that you have received the complete set of bodhisattva vows, a pure set of bodhisattva vows. And if you have no courage to take the bodhisattva vows, you should, you could still think of make your firm pledge that you to reach Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. And may, you should also think that you would in, eventually be able to engage in the bodhisattva vows and practices just as the past Buddhas and bodhisattvas have done and reached their goal. So please repeat. I seek refuge in the three jewels. I confess all misdeeds individually. I rejoice in the virtuous deeds of all beings. I take to mind the Buddha's enlightenment. To the Buddha, Dharma, and the highest assembly, I seek refuge until I reach enlightenment. To fulfill the interests of oneself and others, I shall generate the mind for awakening. Having generated the mind for highest awakening, I shall invite all sentient beings as my guests. I shall engage in the delightful supreme practices of enlightenment. May I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Please sit down. So having generated the bodhicitta and taken the bodhisattva vows, you have gained huge merit, and so this helps in purifying negativities quickly, and also gaining merit wisdom, collections of merit and wisdom quickly. And so in the Kadam, sayings of the Kadam tradition, it is said that you should do your best to be able to generate bodhicitta, because bodhicitta, once you have generated bodhicitta within yourself, genuine experience of bodhicitta, this itself is enough to purify your negativities and accumulation of merit and wisdom. There's a story in Tibet, in some place, there was some in Pembo region of Tibet. So some people were actually trying to cause some harm to a Kadam Geshe, a master of the Kadam tradition. And one of the spirits, local spirit, has said to the other spirits and so forth that there's no way we can actually harm this person, because this person actually holds us dearer than himself, and he said, "I dare not harm him." So there is such a story. And I have another story to tell you. In Lower Dharamsala, we used to have a center for what's that? Handicraft center. And people actually found that there was some kind of a ghost which is harming them, because in the night when there's nobody, they see the doors being open or locked. And so when I was actually asked to come down to subdue that, to do some puja rituals. Although I didn't know any rituals for that, I actually accepted their invitation and went there. So I didn't have any other ritual to do, but I meditated on bodhicitta, this altruistic thought to help other sentient beings. And so I thought that, of course, these sentient beings, these spirits or whatever was there, were by harming others, they were actually accumulating bad karma. And so after my meditation on bodhicitta, I don't remember whether I got some remuneration or not, but later on I was reported that it has helped. My meditation had helped. So I don't have any other practices to overcome the evil or forces. And even in dreams, I have actually seen And when I was about to face some challenge or some harm from spirits and so forth, I would say some mantras, but they would. There's no guarantee whether they would help or not. Sometimes it helps, sometimes not. But in my dream, when I meditate on compassion, then the harmful spirits that come into my dreams also kind of go away. And so I'm able to pacify the bad situation. And so, whether it's to overcome your sicknesses and temporary problems or ultimate goal, there is no greater or practice than bodhicitta. And so the Buddha taught and gave his teachings on generating bodhicitta to those who are receptive to this. So you'll be able to fulfill all your goals, short-term and long-term goals, ultimately omniscience or Buddhahood. And whether you attain Buddhahood or not is very much reliant or contingent upon bodhicitta, whether you have bodhicitta or not. And so, in order to establish the basis for this Jhenang blessing, the Lama also should also have done the generation of himself into a deity, transforming himself in visualization into a deity. And then the disciples also need to receive the blessings of Manjushri, visualizing the Lama as a Manjushri, as I have already explained earlier. And those of you who have, as explained already, those of you who have received full-fledged initiation of Avalokiteshvara or some other deity, you may at this point visualize yourself transforming into Manjushri. So with this mantra of Om Swabhava Shuddha Sarvadharma Swabhava Shuddhaham, you meditate on emptiness. So, Om Swabhava Mantra. So, Om in this mantra is comprises three letters, A, U, and Ma. So these three letters represents our body, speech, and mind at this impure level. And also at the stage of Buddhahood, this also represents, these three letters represents the body, the purified body, speech, and mind of a Buddha. And so with this Om syllable representing our body, speech, and mind, with the three letters that form Om, and so Swabhava means Swabhava Shuddha means pure inherently from inherent existence. So as I explained earlier, when you think about yourself, you have the sense of I, but then when you try to look for that I within the body, speech, and mind, you will not find it. Although, I mean, therefore, you say that, I mean, you as a person does not have any inherent existence that is represented or referred by Swabhava Shuddha. And then Sarva Dharma Shuddha refers to the psychophysical aggregates. Even they do not have any inherent existence, they being the basis of yourself as a person or self. And so you meditate and single-pointedly focus your mind on emptiness of yourself as well as the psychophysical aggregates, having no inherent independent existence. And so with that mind, when you focus completely, I mean single-pointedly on emptiness, that is meditating on emptiness, the ultimate reality. And so you are also meditating on the Dharmakaya in this case. And then from that emptiness, you arise yourself into a deity, transforming yourself into a deity. And within that meditation on a deity, you also meditate on emptiness of yourself. And therefore, you have the meditation on the conventional nature of yourself as well as the ultimate nature. So how do you actually go about with the meditation on emptiness that is shown by this mantra? And therefore, you have Om Shunyata Jnana Swabhava mantra. So Shunyata refers to emptiness, and the Jnana is the wisdom which is focused on emptiness. So this wisdom is absorbed totally in emptiness, and thereby it's non-dual. And Vajra shows that non-duality. And then, so so Om Shunyata Jnana Swabhava, in this mantra, the Swabhava doesn't refer to the emptiness of external objects that are not directly related to you as in your experience as such. I mean, but it refers to the emptiness of your self or your mind itself, because the mind itself, your mind itself, is right from the moment it came into existence, it is devoid of any independent existence, and therefore it is empty by nature in that sense. And therefore, the mind, which is the basis of the emptiness of your mind, and the emptiness of the mind, are is the property, and therefore they are together. In other words, you are meditating on your own true nature of being empty of inherent existence. That kind of emptiness is meditated on here. And so, please meditate. As we have already talked in the last 2 days also, think about yourself. When you say you are a student, for example, how does this I appear to you? And then when you think about Manjushri, none of the uncontaminated parts of the Manjushri is Manjushri himself. And apart from the different parts or of Manjushri, you cannot have an entity called Manjushri as well. And so, as you meditate on emptiness, you can think along these lines from the Mula Madhyamaka Karika, which says that the Tathagata is neither the aggregates nor different from the aggregates. It is neither in the aggregates nor the aggregates are in the Tathagata. So what else is the Tathagata? And so similarly, you can think about Manjushri. So Manjushri is not someone different from its aggregates, nor are they different, and so forth. And so when we think about Manjushri, we can also talk about the activities of Manjushri. So apart from the different actions, you cannot have the actor. And so there is nothing that exists apart from being relative and contingent upon other factors. So although when we don't do any kind of analysis, we may say, oh, this and that thing exist. And Seventh Dalai Lama says, at the crossroad of all the six perceptions, there is this hazy appearance, and therefore, which has no ground. And so meditate and do not think that there is some true solid existence out there. Meditate on emptiness, he says. And he says further that within this sphere of experiences, and all the multiplicity of things dissolve into this sphere of emptiness. And so when you meditate, when you are absorbed in meditation or emptiness fully, you are in this meditative state. But when you come out of that meditation on emptiness, single-pointed, I mean, absorption, you come out of it, then the multiplicity of things, the diversity of things appear. But although they do appear to have some kind of true independent or absolute existence, yet from your experience of emptiness, you'll be able to confirm that they do not exist as such, and therefore you'll be able to confirm that things are like illusion. And therefore, within this illusory nature of things, understanding and insight into the illusory nature of things, you'll be able to do all the practices comprising pertain to whether the method part of the practice or the wisdom part of the practice. And therefore, through this kind of practice, as Master Nagarjuna says, may through this virtue, may all sentient beings be able to complete the two accumulations of merit and wisdom, and thereby attain the two Buddha bodies, the so that resultant state of Buddhahood is, comprises the form body and the Dharmakaya, and so these are in undifferentiable at that stage. And so, if you have you understood something about emptiness? Does it make some sense to you? When you think about emptiness, you may think that, you may have this feeling that, there's nothing really that I can hold on to, but it makes sense. And so please meditate on emptiness. Dissolve yourself into emptiness. And from or everything, including the external and internal world of sentient beings, dissolve into emptiness. So external, internal phenomena dissolving into emptiness. Having dissolved into emptiness, from within that, and so just as you have different forms of water, such as ice and snow, and then the water bodies, I mean, all these other solid things are in the nature of water. So likewise, everything, the diversity of things, have the same nature of being empty of inherent or independent existence. So in that sense, they are of one taste. And so from one corner of your mind, this mind meditating on emptiness, now you determine that at the point of your heart, for example, at this point, as there are these chakras in your body, although in this tantra we don't talk about the chakras and channels and so forth, but at the level of your heart, you imagine that a lotus flower opens, and then on that you see a Manjushri syllable, and then you transform into Manjushri. And so, with this meditation on emptiness, And the bodhicitta, this is the best offering to the Buddhas, to please the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So this called the syllable, from the syllable, rays of light goes out and makes offering to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, as well as purifying the sentient beings. And so then the rays of light come back, are drawn back, and then you transform, this syllable transforms into yourself as Manjushri, holding Manjushri yourself as a Manjushri and holds the scripture in your left hand. You can imagine also Manjushri Namasangiti text. And he's sitting in the meditation, full lotus posture. Or sitting on a moon disc on the lotus. With his sword in his right hand. And so you should also imagine, just as you have imagined yourself as Manjushri in this form, likewise you should imagine the Lama in a similar form. So those of you who have not received the full-fleshed initiation, please visualize Manjushri appearing on your crown. I'm going to tell you a story. One Lama was giving some teaching, and the Lama told the disciples that they should visualize Lama on their crown. And there was a person who was bold, and because of his boldness, whenever he tried to visualize the Lama on his crown, he always felt that the Lama actually slipped down his hat. And so here, visualize yourself as a deity, and Manjushri, or on your crown, and on the three places of Manjushri, visualize these three Manjushris, white on your crown, red at your throat, and then dark blue at your heart. So with this firm devotion and ascertainment that the Lama is Manjushri here, imagine that from his heart rays of light go out and they invoke the dozen bodhisattvas of the 10 directions, and from their heart comes the Manjushri in different sizes. And they come, these Manjushris from the 10 directions, which emanate from the heart of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, come down and shower on you, and therefore dissolve into your body through the pores of your body, and thereby you receive the blessing of the body of Manjushri. And this is the mantra for stabilizing and this blessing. And so that's the establishing the basis of for the jenang. Sorry. So at the heart of the disciples as well as the master, both visualizing themselves as Manjushri, visualize here a wheel with five spokes on it. Because you have the five syllables, Om Ara Pa Tsa. So you can visualize Manjushri and this wheel with five spokes for the five syllables Om, A, Ra, Pa, Cha, and Na, and then the D at the center. So visualize receiving the blessing of the Manjushri. Please repeat this. Om Arapatsa Nadi.
Om Arapatsa Nadi.
Om Arapatsa Nadi.
Om Arapatsa Nadi.
Please recite this mantra 21 times. Omara Bazanadi, 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 Nadi Marapata Nadio, Marapata Nadio, Marapata Nadio, Marapata Nadi. Please repeat this longer mantra. We'll do it only once. That should do. We may not need to recite it three times. Please repeat. Namo Manjushriye. Kumara, Buddhaya, Bodhisattvaya, Mahasattvaya, Mahakaru Nikaya, Teyatha, Om Aranze, Biranze, Shuddhi, Bishuddhi, Shuddhaya, Vishuddhaya, Amale, Vimale, Nirmale, Zayaware, Rurutale, Hun, Pepepe, Swaha. So we'll do it with one repetition. So when you say recite Arapazana mantra, from the heart of the Manjushri in the front generated Manjushri, at his heart is the wheel, and the rays of light and nectar come from that, and these rays of light and nectar come in the form of Manjushri, and then blessing you. So that you have the blessing of Manjushri, and be, thereby you gain the wisdom. Whatever you are studying, and you gain this wisdom called vast wisdom. And so, with the body of Manjushri, from the body of, based on the body of Manjushri's blessing, you have this vast wisdom that you gain. With which you are able to actually see what you are studying very clearly whenever you hear them. And then there is also the wisdom which is called clear wisdom, which is to say that you have a wisdom which actually sees things very clearly without mixing things up. And that is based on the Arapazana mantra, and then the next is visualizing the D syllable coming from the Manjushri's heart, from the wheel. And with this D syllable that enters your heart, you gain the blessing of wisdom, which with which you are able to think very quickly about something that you are you wish to understand without having to put much effort, and so that is called swift wisdom. And then from the rays of light and nectar that comes from Manjushri's heart, you imagine that the the sword, wisdom sword of Manjushri, appear and they dissolve into you, as the wisdom sword can be as small as the smallest particles of those rays of light, and they come to you and dissolve into you. Thereby, you gain the wisdom, the profound wisdom. so that you are able to actually extend the reasonings very quickly. Once you have understood something through reason, you could actually extend that same logic to others to understand other things without effort. And so these are the four different types of wisdoms that come on the basis of the four objects. And then there's also the wisdom that you generate for teaching and debating or arguing for argument, and also composition that come from on the basis of the text. And then the sword, and then the sword and text together. So when you recite this praise to Manjushri, visualizing the Lama and the deity Manjushri to be inseparable from each other, you say the praise, and then Om Aravazanadi mantra, maybe one round of mala. For generating wisdom within yourself. And so sometimes also you can visualize the stream of nectar coming down from Manjushri to wash away your impurities. And then you can also meditate or visualize a cool nectar flowing from Manjushri, overcoming the sicknesses that have to do with heat. And then to have, when you, if you have some sicknesses that are due to coldness, then you should you can visualize warm nectar coming from Manjushri and so forth. And so when you do these practices based on Manjushri, you should think, you could actually do meditation like these. So since my childhood, I've been doing meditation and practice on Manjushri. Partly it may have to do with my genetic inheritance, but mainly through my practice. And it also helps to develop this retentive memory, unforgettable retentive memory as well, although sometimes I have difficulty remembering people's names. So you, the small young kids, should I boast something with you about myself? Is it okay? Yes. It's okay, they say. You should develop wisdom as clear and swift and vast as the Dalai Lama. Okay? So if it will make some difference to you. And vast wisdom as well. And then next is for unforgettable retentive memory. You visualize the syllable with the hand pointing inwards in your throat, and at your heart also you visualize this six-spoked a wheel with the six syllables on the six spokes, and the at the center. As you say, as you repeat this the syllable, you should imagine that the D at your throat that is pointing down inside drips like butter dripping from a butter lamp.
And then this the D that drips from this D at the throat goes down at your heart, and it drips on the goes into the D syllable, and thereby the fire or the flame at the D syllable at your heart becomes bigger and bigger. So please do this in one breath. Di ma timba sungse, di di ma saane. So in order to reach Buddhahood, you should be able to do so by using your powerful intelligence and wisdom. And so since the Manjushri is the personification of all the Buddha's wisdom, so on a daily basis, you should recite the Arapazana mantra, Arapazana di mantra, one round of mala every day. So please repeat this. Master, please think of me. I, Vidyadhara, say your name here with this name. From now until I reach enlightenment, I will hold Manjushri, Arya Manjushri, as my meditation deity and recite his mantra 100 times. I pledge this. And then next is blessing. So please use the rice that you have been given to, throw it, visualizing that you are actually offering flowers to the master. Master, I'll hold you. Please hold me close to you. I'll hold you as my master. Please be pleased with me and hold me close to you. May the disciples receive all the blessings of body, speech, and mind of Arya Manjushri. So, since the Lama is in the form of Manjushri, and we have also Manjushri in the front generation, and whether you have visualized yourself transformed into deity Manjushri or Manjushri is on your head, please recite this. His intellect, free of the clouds of two obscurations, shines just as immaculate as the sun. Since he sees all things as they are, really are, he holds a volume of sacred scripture at the center of his heart, plagued by affliction, afflictive confusions caused by darkness of ignorance. Very many living beings are in the prison of conditioned existence. He loves all living beings like only child, and thus has the 60 qualities of melodious speech. The thunderous roar of his voice wakes us up from the deep sleep of afflictive emotions, and his speech frees us from the chains of karma. With a sword in his right hand, he dissevers the darkness of gloom, dark gloom of ignorance, and thus cuts away our seeds of suffering. Primarily pure, he has reached the 10th Bodhisattva Bhumis and have perfected all qualities. Noble son of the victorious ones, with the 112 ornaments adorning your body, I bow to you, Manjushri, and ask you to please dispel the darkness of my mind, O Marabazanadi. And now we go through the text.
Renyedi. So we're on page 46 in English. Son of excellent Dipankara Shri Jana, this life of leisure and opportunity is so difficult to find. Encountering the Buddha's excellent teaching is even rarer. So squander not this leisure and opportunity so rare to find. Why should I not do so? The abyss of lower realm is wide. Strive to distill the antidote to a lack of moral foundation. You might appear heroic for having cheated the abyss, but at this singular juncture, when you have gained a secure footing, like someone accumulating years provision in one Gopalpur. Remain not idle, but apply powerful doses of remedy. So when I visited Gopalpur TCV in Gopalpur, they had actually made an exhibition for an introduction to Buddhism, and they have some portrait. And they have started with their reliance on Guru. I said to the concerned people that, of course, we need Guru reliance, but when you introduce Dharma, this is not the way you go begin. But I've been telling for some time already that when we introduce Dharma, we should do so beginning with the teaching. And as it is made clear in the Abhisamaya Alamkara, when it touches on what are known as the 10 instructions. So that is the main point which tells about the, which uses the term practice, which refers to the two truths, which becomes the object of meditation. And then from there you go and taking off from there you go into the four truths, and then the teaching on the practices pertaining to the three types of beings by overcoming the attachment to this life and attachment to the pleasures of next life, and so overcoming them. And so this is how we should go about with introducing Buddhism. If we could do so, then as I have quoted the 400 verses, someone who has doubt about the teaching of the Buddha, for such a person they should be introduced to emptiness. And so this is how we should go about with introduction to Buddhism. So otherwise, by going through the Lamrim, the stages of the path teachings, it doesn't cover fully the introduction to Buddhism as such. And so in the Lamrim, the great treatise on the stages of the paths, Jerembuche, Master Tsongkhapa, says that having actually explained the Four Noble Truths, he says that this is the foundation on which we should base to lead our disciples onto the path. So it seems Jerembuche's idea is that we should begin by teaching on the Four Noble Truths. And whether it has to do with the four ways of turning mind away from samsara, or the Lamrim, the stages of the path to enlightenment, we should base the teaching on the Four Noble Truths and begin with that. Otherwise, it's difficult to gain a full understanding of the teaching of the Buddha.
Mm.
So, for page 47, life is transient, like a flash lighting in the sky. The moment we are born, our lives are marked for disintegration. I see my own life to be the same, so do not rest, but extract the essence of this life. Life is transient, like water cascading down a waterfall. It travels fast, and none can seize it. I see my own life to be the same, so do not be lazy, but practice the sublime dharma. Life is transient, like a dew drop on a blade of grass, unable to withstand even the tiniest adversity. It swiftly dries up. I see my own life to be the same. So forswear strong grasping at permanence and meditate upon impermanence in the four sessions. In four sessions, life is transient, like a bee at season's end. Though hovering now, a slight shift in the weather and it dies. I see my own life to be the same. So forswear strong greed and meditate upon the defects of samsara. Life is transcend like rays of light of the setting sun. Though brilliant now, they soon will be no more. I see my life to be the same. So forswear strong hatred and cultivate love and compassion. Life is transcend like goats and sheep in a slaughterhouse. Though alive now with no control, they soon will be dead. I see my own life to be the same. So forswear strong delusion and meditation upon profound dependent origination. Life is transient like clouds in the sky. They appear suddenly yet disappear just as quickly. I see my own life to be the same. So forswear strong envy and cultivate the four immeasurable thoughts. Life is transient like a cool gust of wind. It rises in the 10 directions and disappears in the 10 directions as well. I see my own life to be the same. So forswear strong conceit and cut the root of ego views. Ego's view, life is transcendent like a dead bush on a high mountain pass, assailed by birth and aging. It has lost its secure ground. I see my own life to be the same, so forswear strong lust for pleasure and embrace hardship. So His Holiness was commenting on the term suffering, as it is said, and we are a mass of suffering. Life is transcend like people gathered in the marketplace, though assembled now, soon they will scatter in the 10 directions. I see my own life is to be the same. So don't offer feeble resistance, but practice the powerful remedies. So with the on page 50, the verse starting with "My body is immersed in dream and illusion like emptiness." So these from here, emptiness teaching on emptiness is given. So my body is immersed in dream and illusion like emptiness and appearance. My speech in the melodious yet empty sound of echoes. My mind in the union of clarity and emptiness, method and wisdom. Bless me, Father, most kind Supreme Dharma Master. Bless me, Dipankara, Lord of all beings. All phenomena share the reality of impermanence. Therefore, these metaphors of transience are instructions to myself. Listen again, Master Dom, son of the excellent teacher. This teaching from the most sublime mentor of time's impermanence, I see that it serves as an exhortation to my heart. In the summer, thunder resounds and rain falls heavy, and the forests bloom with dense new foliage. Countless birds fill the air with sweet songs. Everywhere the meadows are resplendent with rich turquoise blue. Yet in autumn impermanence strikes, and I see the colors change. This rouses me to virtue. Oh, my most kind master, golden flowers abound when crops are ripe, but due to impermanence's push, they change come winter time. Even the water becomes crystalline, like glass. Making the fowl that depend upon it lose heart, reject it, they fly away to another place. This also is transient, for the wind starts to blow.
Thank you.
Please read on. So Master Drumtempa goes through the different realms like Hell Realm and then the Hungry Ghost Realm. So all these sufferings in the different realms are due to our karma, says basically. So it's rare for us to practice virtue. And we go through life from life after life, through rebirth, due to our karma. So the karmas that we have created follow us, and we accordingly experience the consequences. So since karma is within you, the text says, you do not seek it elsewhere. Since it is skilled at fraud, do not comply with it. Since liberation is impossible, if you befriend bad karma for too long, relate to it like the analogy of a corpse in the sea. Like a charred log reduced to ashes, bad karma destroys the limbs needed to traverse the grounds and paths. Like a contagious disease, it will destroy you without you knowing it. You can at least escape external enemies by running away. Too many times this evil thieving dog has pulled me down. Shut the doors of your senses well, O Domtun, conqueror's son. Purify your interior. O Dharma King endowed with self-knowledge, since such is truth, broaden your commitment to profound karma, page 56, and imbue your actions with constant reverence, and in the dirty white and black rodents analogy told by the emanation of Lord Manjushri, day and night, time eats away at this human life. The afflictions deceive us as if granting joy and happiness. We drink poisonous water as if it were a sweet drink. O son, do not entrust the lifeline of liberation to Mara's hands. Entrust the lifeline of liberation to Mara's hands, but rely day and night upon the wholesome support of your spiritual guide. Befriend the walking staff of excellent, virtuous friend companions. Especially do not cut off your mind from the upholders of discipline. Read the profound sutra that presents karma and its effects. The realization of the path will then gradually arise, O drum. And then this text also goes through the illusory nature of things. So in particular from some ocean of the three higher trainings, you should extract the precious gem that grants all wishes, drive out karma and afflictions with powerful tides of antidote. Hey, if you do this, you will become an excellent person, O Dom. With such acts, you will become the glory of all beings. Wherever there is a lamp, there is illumination. In the same way, from the presence of a cause, an effect ensues. Err not with respect to this law and enter the perfect path. Contemplate the defects of samsara both day and night, for if you know them, you will develop the wish to flee. With these lines, the defects of samsara's cause and effect have been revealed. Now, to speak of the benefits of nirvana, O Gyevajungne, reflect on the following points. Like light shining down through crystal from The space high above Nirvana utterly dispels the world of darkness, illuminating the dependence, for instance, of forms on their visual perceptions. Likewise, from the expanse of nature's purity, thousands of light illuminate samsara and Nirvana in their entirety. Karma and its effects, unreal, are the causes of illusory samsara and nirvana. The hero who sees this and acts accordingly is victorious indeed. The wise one who understands the words and implements them is victorious indeed. The yogi who is released from samsara and nirvana is utterly joyful. And he who has... So, the text goes through how things do exist, although they do not exist the way they appear to us. And therefore, the appearance is illusory. Or, So for us, things in samsara appear to be truly existing, but for the Arya beings who have seen the emptiness directly, nothing truly exists. So here in the text there is a reference to the different directions and also using different analogies of that have different colors. So perhaps these have to do with the different directions, things in the different directions of writing. So people who are not, who have no understanding of the middle way philosophical view, I mean, everything is held as they held everything as having some true independent existence. So the text is, though fully awakened, I'll assume the form of a bodhisattva. I'll fulfill the wishes of sentient beings, my parents. May I, through the two forms, bodies, enact the welfare of all beings, revealing to each and every one whatever is most suited to his or her needs. This profound teaching, the most precious heart drop that lies inside the innermost chamber of the sacred mind's amulet, by beautifully adorning the environment with a wide array of things, may I always cherish this teaching in my heart and never be separated from the excellent teacher, the conqueror, the conqueror's mother and her children. May I, from this point on, throughout the entire universe, reveal this teaching when I see those with fortunate mental continuums, displaying affliction-ridden deeds, even when my afflictions have ceased. And so, Drumtempa has composed this as a self-exhortation, but it touches on the different points of how to generate points of renunciation, compassion, loving-kindness, bodhicitta, and so forth, and meditation on emptiness. And so we have completed this text.
That's good. That's good. That's good. That's good. That's good.
So I'll do the concluding ritual. So we have completed the Dharma discourse this time. So when in the past, when one Amdo Lama, there was an Amdo Lama in the Amdo region, and some villagers invited him to come to their village to give teaching. And the Lama said, "I'm very old, too old to come to your village." And then the the people who wanted to invite the Lama told him, "Even if you may not be, because of your age, you may not be able to give teachings to us, please come to our village to bless us with your hands, touching your hands on our head." And then the Lama said, "Okay, I will come." And then when he was there, and he gave a very long teaching, and then he said, "I'm not someone who touches his samsaric impure body, the hand on other's head, and make them reach liberation. But I'm someone who gives teaching and helps you to reach enlightenment." So doesn't this Lama seem to be a quite strong Lama, full of integrity? And so he said that he was someone who gave teachings, make people understand the teaching of the Buddha and give blessing through that, in that way. And so I also consider it very important to explain the teachings. For example, during the Kalachakra initiations, I give the preliminary teaching, which I consider most important, because this will actually help the people who come to the initiation. And so just by touching the water and the vase and so forth on your crown will not have much effect otherwise. So when I was small, I used to really enjoy the nectar and the blessed water. And then particularly during the secret initiation in the Daisy Yoga Tantra, I really was fond of receiving them. So apart from tasting these different things, water, nectar, and so forth, and just initiation itself may not be so effective. And so as Tibetans upholding this Nalanda tradition, we should think how much we can actually use this heritage that we have, this treasure, which is our identity, how much we can use this to contribute to the world at large. And so, you young kids, you should do your best to learn about our heritage. And I say goodbye to you, Tashidelek, and we'll meet again next year. You have received the blessing of Manjushri, and you should. So after doing your practice on Buddha Manjushri by saying his praise and reciting his mantra, come back next year with a better intelligence and clearer mind next year.
The protector of Avalokiteshvara may pray before Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to fully embrace the land of snows. May good things appear now through your prayers. By the profound interdependence of emptiness and relative forms, with compassion through the three jewels and the words of the truth, and through the infallible law of one's actions and their fruits, may this prayer be unhindered and quickly fulfilled. With homage to the Lamas and Avalokiteshvara. And then his long life prayer of His Holiness. So, paying my homage to Your Holiness, who is the embodiment of all the objects of refuge and the emanation of Avalokiteshvara. So, having received the teachings and the blessings, we make this mandala offering, as it is the reason for this is, as it is said in the Manikambum, the collection of teachings on Avalokiteshvara. Avalokiteshvara has promised to hold the land of snow as his dominion. Therefore, Avalokiteshvara has emanated himself countless times to help the beings of the land of snow. And in the 10 years, including this year, you have given us series of teachings every year, an introduction to Buddhism. So we request you to remain in the emanation body and carry out the enlightened deeds of the Buddha's body, speech, and mind. And we offer the text of Amita use for long longevity, 113 times. For you to live long, and we offer the statue of Manjushri, as it is said in the prayer of Manjushri, through the light of light rays of your supreme wisdom, O compassionate one, may you dispel the darkness of my ignorance completely and grant me the light of wisdom to confidently fathom the depths of the Buddha's word and its exegetical treatises. And so this offering is in order for us to develop the wisdom realizing emptiness and the compassionate heart of Bodhicitta in order to be able to work for the sentient beings. So until we reach enlightenment, we request you to turn the wheel of Dharma endlessly. And the stupa that we offer is to represent that your abiding amongst us with your enlightened heart. So we have made these offerings for our temporary and ultimate, for to achieve and fulfill our temporary and achievement goals. So with due respect, we make these offerings to you, and please accept them for our sake. Thank you. We're done.